Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome to another episode of the QuakeCast. Today, we have somebody who is no stranger to the Quake community, Fifth Elephant.
Yes, and he's an accomplished mapper who you probably will recognize his maps from Arcane Dimensions. We'll get into that. He also started an Unreal tournament, and he actually beat out a really big name in the game industry in a mapping competition. So we'll hear a little bit about that. And one of the fun things, I know that this mapper is very superstitious, and we're going to hear some of his kind of little quirks while he's mapping. So that'll be fun.
In addition to that, we're going to hear a little bit about his road rash adventures on his bike.
Run, run.
Watch out for the chain. Dump truck, watch out.
Ah!
I've always been a PC gamer. From a very young age. It's a strange thing being a PC gamer in like the early 90s. It's especially when you're a teenager, I guess. Just because no one that I knew had a gaming PC. Everybody had PlayStation no one had a Saturn. Everyone had a PlayStation. I was the only person I knew who had a PC. At least a gaming PC. So I'd already played, by the time I played Quake 1, I'd already completed Doom and Duke Nukem 3D. I probably shouldn't have played Duke Nukem 3D at such a young age. I don't know what lasting time I might have had.
Like, what Shake it, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Mum walks in and I'm like, oh no, switch it off.
They're not hookers. They're not, I swear.
They're escorts. That's a nice way.
That's funny.
Yeah, I played, the interest with Quake was mostly due to, I think it was Computer Video Game Magazine. I don't know if it was out in that time in America, but it was quite a popular.
Which one was it?
CVG? Computer and video
CVG.
Games.
Yeah. I'm familiar with computer video games. Yeah, yeah. Now,
I definitely remember it.
They were pretty cool on covering loads of like mods and things like that. So, they would cover mods for Doom, and you know, when Quake Test came out, they had an article on that. And people were already modding Quake Test before the Quake was even released. It was pretty crazy. So I was like, yeah, I need to play this game. It looks amazing. It looked unlike any other game at the time, with light mapping and all this type of stuff, room over room. It was so fresh. And I had to get it. So like at 13, when the game actually came out, you know, the first thing I did was head into a Virgin Megastore, I think it was at the time. And I just bought the game. Like, I think it was a 15 rated game in the UK, and I went and bought it. That was like, they didn't ask me for ID or anything. I was like, yeah, I want to buy this, and they were like, yeah, there you go. And I'm like, oh my god,
you're like, score! It's like sneaking into an R-rated movie or something. Woo-hoo!
Right.
I must have looked old as a kid.
Did you have your beard at 13?
No, I didn't. I didn't have the beard. In fact, the beard thing is very much a middle age. You know, I've given up on life. I'm 35 now, and I'm like, yeah, my shaving days are over at this point. That's not happening ever again.
Wait a minute, you're not depressed, are you?
I've already gone through my midlife crisis. I bought a motorbike at 13.
There you go. Oh my god.
Like, right, I'm in my 30s. I'm buying a motorbike. That's it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, take it from someone who is in midlife. Go for it. Just keep going crazy. Buy more stuff. Enjoy yourself.
Exactly.
So from that point, yeah, it's not surprising that you know, you jumped into Quake if you were already playing Doom and Duke Nukem. And it even says here that you had your first PC around 10.
What I used to do is, you know, the PC was pretty much bought out of my own money. My parents had like an IT business, and with my family, my uncle and everything, and I used to, it was kind of crazy. I used to build PCs for, you know, for like schools and businesses and stuff. Like,
wow.
And then I used to get money for it, and, you know, just buy my own PC stuff. I think I was really lucky. You know, because PCs are, you know, they've always been prohibitively expensive, and, you know, the fact that I was able to do that is just, you know, very fortunate with family situation and stuff. So I'm not rich
That's
by
awesome.
Any stretch of the imagination. I just, you know, I was just very fortunate at the time.
I remember my first PC, I had an Apple IIe, and I'm always impressed when you guys tell me these things that you've done when you're really young, all the Quakers in the community, you especially with this one, building a computer at 10, because we got that Apple IIe. I was surprised that I was like, you could turn the floppy over and that's how it works. Wow. Mm-hmm. You know,
no, and I had a really good PC as well, like in the day. So my uncle, he basically gave me an old Matrox card that he had. And if you know anything about PC components at the time, like a Matrox card was like a super good, like 2D card.
Kind of a workstation thing.
He had a workstation card, and it was just like, you know, I'm upgrading, here you go, I have this card. And it was like a £150-200 2D card at the time. And it runs software Quake at like, you know, 30-60 FPS just in software mode. And that was, you know, at a semi decent resolution, not 640x480, but like you could do it at say 512x384 and it would do it just fine. And then I got I was still building PCs, and, you know, with my pocket money, as soon as not as soon as 3DFX cards came out, but not long after they came out, I bought one of those because I was like, I saw it in a magazine. I'm like, there's no way, I can't live without this. I need this in my life.
Definitely.
It was awesome.
I'm sure you're the guy that everybody in your family who's not in the business comes to. It's like, how do I do this on my PC? I can't get it to work.
Well, I mean, I do it.
I'm sure you're that guy.
My job is literally like selling IT components to people and stuff. So,
oh wow.
And before that, I used to sell video games and stuff. So it's just kind of a thing I can't really get away from.
Yeah, it sounds like it's in your DNA. That's awesome. So now how did you get from, obviously you played Quake, but then Unreal Tournament, you seem to, you know, dip your toe into that. And tell us a little bit about your career with Unreal Tournament, your mapping career.
Yeah, so Unreal Tournament was, it was one of those games that just, you know, I had played Unreal 1 before it came out. And, you know, and I heard that they were doing, you know, like a mission pack for Unreal 1. I think they called it originally the bot pack, and then they turned it into a fully fledged game, I guess, when Quake 3 was announced. So that came out. I saw in the review, in the magazines, you know, what type of game, and it had like the editor as part of the, you know, as part of the game, and I was like, yeah, no, this is what they made the game with. I'm gonna have to buy this. I want to learn how to do this, and I did. I just, you know, went at it on the editor as best as I could, just so I could, you know, make my own stuff. And it was my first real attempt at like being serious with it. You know, I kind of stuck with it with Quake 1. I had bought Aftershock for Quake, which, you know, that came with an editor called Thread. I made a level with that, and it was crap. It was really bad. It was such a bad level. I was still young, so I kind of didn't have the attention span, you know, to see it through to completion at the time. And then, you know, with Unreal Tournament, I just made sure that I you know, that I just did it, you know, made the levels and stuff.
And you made a ton, right? Obviously a lot of, and seems like a lot of, obviously if it's for tournament, it was all multiplayer stuff. And so you were in the multiplayer community for that for quite a while. Cause when I read your bio, I saw Bombardiers on there, and I will say, I remember playing something called Bombardiers. So I remember it jumped out at me, but yeah. I don't actually remember that mod, but
It's not the same as there was an official one called Bombing Run, but it was nothing like Bombing Run. It was a bit like CTF, but instead of capturing the flag, you went over to the, imagine instead of flags, you have like a reactor, and you went over to the enemy base and you had to destroy the reactor. The mod wasn't actually that good because, you know, if you just stood there shooting at a thing in a map, it can get boring pretty quick. It was when the other enemy attacks you and stuff, that's when the gameplay came in. So you had to kind of make an arena run. There was like a deathmatch arena, but with like an objective in the middle of it. That was in PC Gamer. It was, you know, my first like taste of, yeah, this is, you know, this is something that I could, you know, see myself doing in the future. Obviously, I didn't end up doing that as a full-time job, but, you know.
Now you did this mapping contest where you had to, limitations, and you actually got a better score than somebody that you idolized, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so there was this guy in the Unreal tournament community. He was like the biggest troll of all time, but he was also one of the best mappers. So he was a very, like, very polarizing figure in the Unreal tournament community. A German guy called David Munich, and he made this, it was this contest to make a good level using just 5 brushes. Now, that sounds like not enough to even make a cube if you're, if you're making a Quake level, but the way that Unreal Tournament worked at the time was the whole world was solid, and you just create one brush, so you could pick a square, and then you subtract from the solid world, and that would make a hole in that solid world, and then you could just run around this cube. So it was actually viable to make a level using just 5 cubes, although it was, you know, it's kind of difficult. And yeah, I placed higher than Cliffy B, who was one of the Unreal Tournament level designers.
Yeah.
Very funny. Wow. It was a silly little contest, you know. I think anyone could have come any place. I just made a level that was that kind of played pretty well, and these guys, I didn't win anything. It wasn't like a proper contest. It was just, you know, something fun, like a map jam kind of thing. But
Like bragging rights.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I got bragging rights.
Yeah,
and you're telling the story years later too. I beat Cliffy B. That's, which is great.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I idolized this guy. He's, you know, he made some amazing levels for Unreal Tournament, and he used to have on his website a review thing called Cliffy B's Ownage, and it was basically all the best Unreal Tournament levels at the time. It was brilliant. My goal was to get on Cliffy B's Ownage, but I never made a level good enough. So I got my one little victory over him, I guess.
Well, especially after you beat him, he's not going to include it. He's like, fuck that guy.
Yeah, I guess so.
So, well, let's kind of segue to Quake, but you did your first SP map that I played actually this morning, because I hadn't played it before. It's really cool. And so I could see, like, it is hard to come from like an Unreal tournament where you're doing subtractive, you know, stuff, and then going into Quake, but you actually nailed it. So was that an early iteration of Trench Broom that you used, and that's kind of what brought you in back to Quaking? Is that basically what it was?
So, no, I mean, I was already, so the reason I was playing Quake at the time is I'd been made redundant from a place I was working, and you know, and after a few months I was like, you know what, I've not played Quake in a while, I'll just install it and then I did a bit of searching, like, you know, what levels, you know, tried to find some of those really old maps I used to enjoy as a kid, like, I think there was a level called Obi-Wan, and I played that a bunch of times. And then I came across a bunch of Andrew Van Palmer maps. And I was like, yeah, this guy's awesome. Like, I need to play. And I played all of his levels in just like a sitting. And I was like, well, I wonder if I've still got the mapping chops, because by that point I'd not made anything for years and years. I'd, you know, real life had taken over at that point, and I'd just kind of shelved the whole dream of becoming a professional, like, game developer or whatever. So there was no thought other than let's see if I can still do this. So I was mapping with Worldcraft 1.6. And I'd got to a point where I'd made a bunch of stuff, and I was using the carving tool and all this type of stuff, and all my brushwork was just whack. and I was like, right, what the hell am I doing? And I just kind of shelved what I was doing at the time. And then Trenchbeam was just like, you know, it literally just been released, and I watched the trailer for it, and I'm like, oh my God, this looks amazing. Let's give this a go. And I'd shelved the previous map because it didn't load up Worldcraft files at the time. And I just really slogged at it and released a remake of Deck 16, which is kind of, you know, one of my favorite maps as a kid. It's probably one of the most remade maps of all time because of just how good it is. It's got, you know, one of the best layouts ever in a level. That was pretty much my first ever single player release ever. I'd never made a single player map before then. So I'd made a deathmatch version first, and I'd tried my best to get it out as quick as I can, because I wanted to be the first guy to make a trench boom map. So I released the first deathmatch level for Trench Broom, which was, which was Deck 16. And I think I called it Q Deck. And then I kind of cheated. I was like, well, you know, I'm the first deathmatch level guy, so let's do the first single player level. So I just converted it to a single player map. I was like, let's just get this out the door and let's get both of them. It's just kind of funny.
It's pretty crazy, even how different was the, I'm looking at the screenshots right now, so the multiplayer version versus the single player version, and obviously you added single player gameplay in you, but did you kind of spread out the design? Obviously I know you did, but how close were the two maps is what I'm asking.
There's an entire section, there's a bunch of sections in the level that are only in the single player version. You know, the Q Deck is actually a very, other than the scale, it's quite a tight map. It's only, you know, it'd be pretty hectic even with four players. Whereas Deck 16, you could easily have eight players on the map, and, you know, and it was quite a large accommodating level. So there's like an under floor area with like some bunk beds. So I made, you know, lots of environmental storytelling. There's like a prison area of the map, so it's Deck 16, but it's a lot different in the single player version of the game. So I didn't cheat that much. I put some actual effort into it. I didn't want to seem like a hack.
No, I think that's important, because I, as someone who has gone back into the depths of the Quake grave and played maps from 96 and 97, it was actually like a very normal thing for people to take a deathmatch map and just put enemies in it and say, yeah, it's got single player, but it doesn't play right. And for you to do that, I think it's a very smart approach.
Yeah. I mean, there are some really good examples. Is it the Coagula series? I think there's a bunch of deathmatch levels in that actually translate pretty well to single player. So it can be done, but you have to think. You have to think about how you want the player to traverse through the level, and you have to have a start and an end point. But the good thing about a lot of deathmatch levels is the flow and the layout are pretty good. So fighting in those areas is, you know, is a lot of fun. So it can help coming from a deathmatch background.
So now, how did you go from, now obviously you were involved with a tremendous amount of jams, because I've got your page open here. Like I'm looking at, Funk Map Jam 1, 2, I don't see 3 in there, 4, 5, some Christmas jams in there. So out of all these, like, where did you feel, I mean, obviously from the beginning, because Q-Deck is so accomplished, from the beginning, you had some serious chops. So when did you start feeling like, okay, this is Quake mapping, this I have to keep doing this, because you really, I mean, you really dove in. I could see during 13, 14, 15, you were really mapping, putting out a lot of maps.
Yeah, I mean, it helps to be unemployed, I guess.
Yeah,
right. I do attribute that to kind of keeping me sane. Like, mm-hmm. being unemployed for 18 months sucks. It sucks so hard.
Right.
Between running the Quake Guy blog on Tumblr and making levels and stuff, like, I honestly feel like the Quake community helped me just, you know, stay focused and, you know, not, you know, spiral downwards, I guess. In terms of, like, you know, thinking serious about levels, it was only when Sock kind of got in touch with me about Arcane Dimensions that, you know, I started trying to take it a lot more seriously, because obviously he's a professional, you know, he's been in the game industry, so, you know, to have him ask to make stuff for you is an honor, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And before we get into Arcane Dimensions, you touched on your Tumblr, and I wanted to mention the Tumblr, because way back, like, 5 years ago, before I started the Quake Rave, I actually found your Tumblr first and was like, oh man, people are still supporting Quake here, or at least someone is posting about it. And your Tumblr is what actually led me to find Quidicted and all this other stuff that existed right now in the community. So it's kind of a gateway for me. So yeah. I don't know if that happened for other people, but it's a really cool place to visit.
Yeah, I have neglected it. I've asked a few people if they can... you know, if they can help with it, because it's a good, I mean, there's like 1500 followers on that, and I've not updated it in ages, and every time I post on there, it gets, you know, you get like 500 likes and retweets? No, what's the Tumblr version? I can't remember. So anyway, there's lots of,
I forget too.
Yeah. And again, there was another guy, he did, Doom guy, knee deep in the blog.
Oh yeah, the Doom guy. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of got the idea of him. Like, Tumblr was, you know, starting to come up as being a really good social media platform, and he was almost like role playing the Doom guy, which was, I found pretty funny. So I was like, well, no one's made a Quake one, I'm just gonna rip him off. So I did that, and yeah, it was just fun to have like a presence on a different social media site. It's fun stuff.
Nice. So yeah, let's dive back actually to what you're talking about with Sock and Arcane Dimension. So how did that actually come to be? You said he contacted you, right?
Yeah, he just emailed me out of the blue and said, I'm working on this mod. Are you interested in, you know, doing some stuff for it, and, you know, maybe we'll, you know, put a map or two in, and I was like, yeah, that sounds really interesting. So it was the first proper, you know, outside of Funk kind of involvement in a proper project. Obviously, before I was ever mapping, Quoth was already released, or however you pronounce it. So I was like, yeah, I'll happily, you know, join in, and he kind of started making it off the back of Brutal Doom. I think Brutal Doom was already a thing at the time. And he said, well, it's going to be kind of like Brutal Doom. And it was mostly just like a gore mod. It was, I think originally it was called Body Bag, the mod. So all the folders, my original folders are like B-Bag 1, B-Bag 2, with all the different versions of the mod. And, you know, by when I joined, there was only like extra gore, there was like limbs and stuff, and then he started throwing in like monsters, and like after 6-10 months, something like that. There was so many monsters in the mod. I'm like, what the hell am I going to do with all these guys? Like, just too much. Like, it's kind of weird. It's, you know, developing for Arcane Dimensions was like, you know, trying to build a train while you're going along the track, or trying to lay the track while the train's running along. You know,
right?
It's a very strange thing, and I'm, you know, it's a lot closer to like actual game development. In that sense, because, you know, you've got all placeholder art and things like that. So it was a very good and very useful learning experience working on that mod. But I got burnt out on that. I kind of, you know, I was, by the time I was working that mod, I was no longer unemployed, and I had a sucky ass job and all this type of stuff. So, you know, I got really burnt out. I mean, you know, Eric kind of touched on it in his interview, and you know, and he was right. I was, you know, I'd been working on Tfuma for about, I don't know, about 10 months, and it was nonstop.
Wow.
It was really nonstop. Like, and I'd done so much stuff work on that map before Eric kind of took over it. And I hadn't touched it for a long time, and they just was, and then they sent me a version, and I was blown away by the amount of stuff that they added to it. Like, you know, I probably did about 75% of the layout, but that extra 25% was incredible that those guys had done.
Yeah, it's one of the perfect examples of a collaboration, because you, like, you know, it's so solid. And I've said this on the show before, it's one of my favorite maps I've ever played, and I've definitely gone back to it a few times. I know RC's played it, but yeah. That's one of those things. Like, that's how it works, you know. In the game industry, you know, not there are very few lone wolves. You know, it is a team collaborative effort. So you know, and it shows in the level. You know, you had a great foundation, and then they just, and I believe, you know, Eric said he was inspired by what you did. So, I mean, that says a lot.
Yeah.
And these guys are,
I've
got
a huge amount of respect for him, you know, like, he's one of the most important people in the Quake community. So,
yeah, I agree. But you are too.
Yeah, man.
So you were involved pretty early on, and so you did the DM1 remix first, correct? Am I getting that right?
So the DM1 remix is it's kind of a strange thing, because I'd done a lot of the work already on Tfuma, and I was getting burnt out, and Sock kept adding loads of, like, it kept adding loads of medieval enemies, and I'm like, you know, I kind of need some, you know, I need some base enemies. I can't really do anything with all these guys. So I started tinkering with all these medieval enemies. I just got sidetracked, and I was like, well, you know what, I'm just gonna load up DM1. In the map files, have a look at that, and I just started throwing enemies inside the DM1 map file, just so I could kind of get a feel for how they were playing out. And before you know it, I'd rebuilt, you know, a vast majority of DM1. You know, I kept changing all the brushwork, and I was like, oh, this brush sucks, so I'm just gonna change this, and yeah, and it became my own map in a sense.
And it's a great little map for that pack, though, because one of my favorite things about Arcane Dimensions is it sort of has a little bit of everything for everybody. Like, there are really long, intensive maps for people, but there's also these, like, more snack-sized maps, like the DM1 map. And I remember playing that a couple years ago for the show, and I just adored it, because I was like, oh my god, having played the really long one before this and getting another one that's, like, kind of a snack-sized one, but it's still kind of packed the punch that the first one did. I was like, oh wow, this is great. So I think it really came together.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely tried to stick with the theme for all the additional areas that I added to it, and, you know, it's a good little taste level. I think that's one of the things that kind of is a bit off-putting with some of the Arcane Dimensions map is, you know, they're just the huge sprawling levels, and unless you're willing to set aside like an hour for one map, it can be pretty, you know, pretty tense as a gaming session.
Oh, yeah, oh,
for sure.
Absolutely. Well, I will say that if any mappers are listening, like new mappers especially, if you have not played this remix, it's ADDM1. And I will say this is the way you do a remix, because you brought so much more to that level, because I love that level. I've always loved it. And I have some projects that never saw the light of day that were using that theme. And it's when I played your version of it, I was like, oh my God, this is what I would wanted to do. So I highly encourage people to do it, because you see the level in a totally different way. And that kind of leads me to a question, because I watched you on stream the other day and I was bugging you with some questions when you were mapping. And now you seem to kind of riff and just kind of make things up as you go. And I don't mean it that, you know, that sounds like you're sloppy, which I'm not, that's not what I mean. Yeah. But you were just improvising the other day when you were building that map. Is that what you did on DM1 and Fuma? Did you improvise those things, or did you have a little bit more of a kind of a design when going in?
DM1 was, was mostly just me riffing, and I was essentially just, it was basically a chess map, a glorified chess map. I was putting different combinations of enemies in rooms, all the stuff that kept, coming out every time. Every week there was like a new enemy that Sock had programmed and all this type of stuff. And I'm like, geez, I need to figure out how to use these guys, because you need to know what combinations of enemies go with each other. Chief Humor was a bit different. It was never intended to be the level that it ended up being. So what I started doing with Chief Humor before Eric got involved was it was going to be like a mega map of all the episode one map, all the E1M1 maps. So that's why the beginning bit of the map is a little bit like the start map for Doom 2, with the angular staircase. So as you go in one of the first rooms, after you come out of the start area that Eric built, you drop down and, you go through this tunnel, and there's a bunch of spiders attacking, or scorpions attacking some pyro dudes. And that area does look like, Doom 2 E1M1, because that's what I was doing. I was remaking all these E1M1 maps, and Sock was kind of caught me before I got too far into it and said, we've got a lot of remake maps already in the mod, why don't you make it into its own thing instead? So it was Sock who told me to make something that was unique, because I'd already done a bunch of remake maps anyway. I'd redone DM1, I'd redone Deck 16, I'd done a few remake maps already, and he kind of made me mature a little bit as a level designer and give me some really good pointers. That's kind of the story a little bit of Teeth Humor. And so this is another thing as well. The map was never going to be called Teeth Humor. Sock made me, he didn't like the name that I picked. So the map was going to be called the Toxic Avenger. the idea behind the map originally was you're called into the base to save it. The whole planet was like, was intoxicated, and the premise behind it was like Starship Troopers. You had a bunch of base guys, you had a bunch of scorpion spider kind of enemies, and that's where all the infighting came from. So you were called in to save this base, and then once you've saved the base, there's a whole huge section of the map that I'd scrapped. I'd done loads of different things to try and realize the idea that I had for the map. So once you, at the beginning bit, you shoot a shambler with a laser gun. So the idea was originally you reactivate the laser, but with the blast door open, and then you shoot a laser and it blasts a hole into the, it blasts a hole into like the rock formation, and you go into this cave system. You go all the way down the cave, and there's like some kind of shub Niggurath kind of creature and loads of spiders, and that was going to be a boss room. And then you call in your ship and it takes you out. That was the original idea for the map, but I you know, I got really burnt out on making the boss room, and I just had enough, and Eric and Sock kind of saved the map, and they changed like the way the map was going to end, and they added that reactor room, which, you know, the map is good for it, to be honest.
Well, I'm not surprised that you were a little burned out considering you spent 10 months on it. That's a long time to dedicate to one project like that.
Yeah, it's probably small peanuts for, compared to your proper professional development stuff. So.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I'm really mad at Sock, you know, having changed the name, because Toxic Avenger is so much better.
I love it.
Yeah, I used to watch, you know, all the trauma films as a kid, and Tales from the Crypt and all that kind of shit. You know, I love bad TV, so, you know, so, yeah, I did like the original name of the level, but, you know, it's got a name now, so, and it's still a good level. I don't know if this is just a me thing. I don't know if any other level, you know, mappers have got like mapping superstitions, but every map that I name before I finish, if I name the level, chances are I don't finish making the map. And also, I can't map without my socks on as well.
Okay, that, now you're getting a little weird, but yeah, sure. Okay. You got your lucky socks. Are they the same socks, or just have to have socks?
No, just wear any socks. Like, Britain's cold, man. So,
yeah,
so
that's true.
Like, I get really, I don't know, I can't concentrate properly if my feet are cold. So, I think I have to put socks on.
See, it's just like, I can't do the Quake Rave if I'm wearing pants. So, like, you guys don't know, right? But
now we know what's going on down there with sushi.
Oh, no. Oh, you had to go there.
No, she's just keeping you warm.
Right.
So, I do have one kind of quick nerdy mapper question. So, I don't know if you can talk about this, but if you can, let's go for it. You had to switch over from Trench Broom to another editor. And how was that, you know, coming from the mapping perspective, where you're pulling your hair out, or can you even talk about it? I don't know if you can talk about it.
Well, I mean, I can talk about the differences between the two editors and stuff like that. That's not a problem.
Okay.
You know, there are reasons why I've been learning those, you know, those tools. But I've been playing a lot with you know, NetRadiant recently, which is it's kind of a funny one, because you know, I was actually using an older version of the editor that was a bit janky. And I was just pulling my hair out, because I didn't know all the shortcuts and all this type of stuff, and I felt like I was just being a noob all over again. Trench Broom is such a good editor, and NetRadiant is, you know, it's not really the same in terms of, you know, productivity for me. Trench Broom is the one that I spent most of my time editing with. I'm at a point now with NetRadiant where I actually understand it really well, and I've got, you know, for the speed map jam that's currently going on, I actually was getting a bit frustrated with Trench Broom, because there was a few features missing from it that I was really starting to enjoy in NetRadiant. One of them is if you press Alt and D, you can just you can kind of hide all the funk details, and it's really good for it's really good for finding holes in your map. You know, you're going to find, if you put detail everywhere, that, you know, a brush here or there might, you know, might leak. And, you know, there's a bunch of shortcuts that I wish were in Trench Broom now that are in NetRadiant. It's a good editor. Once you get used to it, like anything, you know, so, and I think the reason why Sleepwalker is working so heavily on Trench Broom, having you know, the support for Quake 3 and stuff as well, is it's the anniversary of Quake 3 this year, isn't it? Is it like the 20th?
Oh, it is. Yeah,
I think it's the 20th. Yeah,
20th anniversary.
Yeah, so it's pretty you know, it's pretty exciting. I hope a few Quake mappers make you know, some Quake 3 maps for Quake 3's birthday. I know it's not the most well-loved game from, you know, from the Quake 1 guys, but, you know, because it's it's not the same type of game. It's not single player or anything. But it's still a really good game. It's like one of the best arcade games. Like, you know, it's really fun. Really fun to play.
Yeah. It's basically my favorite game. So, I mean, it really is. I mean, I don't play it. I don't map for it. I played it for many, many years. Yeah. And it is kind of like, I'm really excited to see Trenchframe going with Quake 3. And I can guarantee you I'm going to do something. I don't know what, but yeah. I'll be doing something for the birthday because I love that game.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, Quake 3 mappers are on a different level. If you ever try to make a Quake 3 style map, there's a learning curve.
Yeah.
Like, it's very, very strange mapping for like Quake 3 style maps.
Yeah, I have to re-educate myself because I did it back in 99 using, the tools back then and just messing around with the shaders and going in that direction. I didn't do anything accomplished, but I did port over a Quake 1 multiplayer map that I made, and it worked. It played really well in Quake 3 as well. So spent a lot of time with it, and then I moved on to Call of Duty United Offensive and kind of spent tons of time on that. Mm. So, but yeah, I miss that Quake 3 engine with his patches and everything. So I'm looking forward to seeing what these guys do.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's going to be great. And I hope Trenchframe gets the Quake 3, proper Quake 3 support that it kind of needs. So I think, having some new blood, in the Quake 3 community, it would be good.
Well, I tell you what, Fifth, we talked a lot about Quake. We talked a lot about other games and stuff, but I want to know a little bit about you. You said you're a biker. But I want to get a little bit into that. So you said at 32, you bought a bike. What is that all about?
This is one of those crazy things. Like, for years and years, I've always wanted a motorbike. And I think I want to put part of it down to the fact that, bikers do look a little bit like, space marines. with a helmet and everything. And that's why I want to put it down to anyway. I don't understand why I had this idea. And it was really a strange thing because, I kind of snuck out of the house to do my bike test because I didn't want anyone to know that I was, that I was doing it. And I'm like, oh yeah. And I came back after being out all day and people are like, where have you been? I'm like, oh, I've got a bike license now. and then about a week later, I came home on a motorbike and everyone's like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? Is he depressed? Like,
he grew a beard. He got a bike. What is going on?
Yeah, it's a very strange thing. But you know what? It's, it's so much fun being on a motorbike. I can't describe it. You just kind of have to do it. It's fun. It's dangerous. Like, someone tries to kill me every day. People don't check for bikers. So. But it's super, super good fun. And I think everybody should at least know how to ride a bike, especially if they're a driver, because there's some lessons to learn about how to look out for bikers and stuff when you're out and about in your car that are invaluable. Makes you a better driver.
Right. And what else makes it dangerous is, I don't know if you guys have played Road Rash, but it's the other guys on bikes with chains and stuff. So
I hate those guys.
You gotta watch out for those guys. Yeah.
You just need a sawed-off shotgun. It's no big deal.
Maybe it's Terminator 2. Arnie's got a shotgun, the cool little, the flippy action shotgun that he's got.
Right.
They ended up putting that in Dusk, the retro game that came out recently.
When you kind of
direct
flip it over.
Yeah, that was directly from Terminator 2. It's like, well, let's just add this to the game because it's cool, and it is cool.
Hell yeah, Terminator 2.
Yeah.
Anything you can rip off from that movie, I'm game for sure. So, Gavin, you got any other secret things that you do you'd like to share maybe to demystify yourself?
I can't really think of anything other than, I suppose, biker things probably the main, the main one that people would probably associate with me outside of Quake level design stuff. I think they even put a little nod to that in Arcane Dimensions. If you get the super secret level, when you collect all the runes, it mentions me having a Quake Bro motorcycle or something like that, I think.
I feel like in your next map, you should get like a real badass picture of yourself standing next to your bike, you know, and put it in like a secret room that's hard to get to.
Yeah, maybe that'd be
fun.
Yeah. Maybe I'll have to do some kind of, you know, I've always wanted to do like a haunted house, you know, American Gothic style, kind of haunted house level. Maybe I could put a portrait of myself as one of the wall portraits in that map.
That's a great idea, yeah. Actually. That would be you could maybe get portraits from other people in the community too.
Yeah,
that might be fun.
Well, one thing I almost just popped in my head. You play a lot of co-op Quake. Do you? What other video games do you play?
So I don't have I'm not tied to any particular genre. I'm not like I don't play like just FPS games. In fact, you know, I play a lot of Forza Horizon 4. That's a game I've been playing a lot with my friends. So
it's a good series.
Yeah, well, that's the first one I've played. I'm like, you know what? I have like a really good graphics card and monitor and stuff. And you know, and a few of my friends are like, we should all play this together. It's fun co-op and like what a co-op racing game. But it's actually as good as like Burnout Paradise and stuff. It's really really good fun.
And do they have motorcycles in that thing?
Unfortunately not, no.
Damn.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't have to have motorcycles. I'm not like one of these weird bikers who like, you know, craps all over car drivers, you know. I like cars as well. I just ride a motorbike, you know. That's it.
No way. Bikes or fuck off, that's what I say.
Got a little salty today, RC.
Sorry. I'm just getting passionate at the end here. Just being silly. All right.
Well, Gavin, it's been a real pleasure having you. I think we got another great episode here.
I would hope so. I don't want to be the boring guy. You know, I would suck. Yeah.
No, that's me.
Oh, no, that's
right. No, it's him. He's right.
Yeah, it is. You know what I'm gonna do before the next episode? I'm gonna drink a bunch of soda or something and just belch the entire time.
This is RC. Thanks for listening to the Quakecast. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And I'm Dump Truck. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for DumpTruck_DS.
All right, that works for me.
We're such goobers.
Totally. We're completely stupid. I wouldn't have to hear that and be like, what the fuck?
These clowns.